Buenas tardes, señoras y señores.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We will begin the session in Latin America. And I have the pleasure of introducing one of the moderators of the session, who is Dr. Mitter Hosses. She comes from Argentina. She was a director of PAHO, September 2002, with the Minister of Health of the Americas. She was the president for a period of 5 years. Mirta Rosses is working in this issue since February 2003, and she's one of the first women, actually the first woman, which has this position throughout the world. In the world of public health, especially in the PAHO, founded in 1992. In September 2007, she was re-elected for the second time as a director of this organization. I give the word to Dr. Mirta Rosses. Thank you, Carlo. Good afternoon to everyone. The colleague that is going to be the co-moderator on this session on Latin America and Caribbean is Carlos Passarelli. At my left, he has a PhD in clinic psychology and the director of the International Center of Technical Cooperation, created based on Brazil as a joint initiative of UNAIDS and the government of Brazil to provide support to the countries in responding to the HIV conference based on the principle of cooperation south. In 2006-2007, he was the associate director of the National Program of AIDS and ETS in the Ministry of Health in Brazil, and right now he is the president of the Council of International Cooperation of the National Program of Brazil. So between the two of us, we will try to make this session fruitful and participative. I will comment about some of the expectations we have for the session. As you know, LAC is a very heterogeneous region. It is the region where the most inequality in the planet, and that's why epidemics are very heterogeneous and will affect in the disproportionate manner to the most vulnerable groups in the region. We have to take into account that not always LAC, due to its economic indicators, comes to be one of the attractive areas of the world for international cooperation. We have to take into account certain features, such as the growing feminization of the epidemics, and the fact that despite these problems, the response of the region was quite early, was strong, very well organized, and as a consequence, we had several discussion fora, and one of the issues that I think we should analyze is the relationship among the different fora, CONCACIDA, the participation of the international conference, in order to express the needs and to identify the achievements and the obstacles that we have in this region. Where, besides that, we have many partners, many allies, and many people participating in this struggle, and some of them will have their voice represented in the panel and many more in the audience. I expect that among the panelists and the people from the audience, we could show, express that heterogeneity of the region, but also the will to move forward in a more forceful way and stepping up our struggle against AIDS. We will begin with our first panelist, who is going to give us an overview on the state of response in the region. It's Cesar Antonio Nunez, our colleague, who is the regional director of the UNAIDS Office for Latin America. Cesar has quite a wide knowledge of the situation because he occupies several positions and he was member of the crew processes of the region in the last year. He was the director of the Honduran National Program and very well known in the Latin American region fora, where he was negotiating and trying to get consensus among the participants. We will give the word to Cesar. Good afternoon to everyone. I'm very happy to be here with you today. And really, looking at the faces, I'm among very good friends. That's a great pleasure for me. Thank you, Carlos Passarelli and Tomita Roses. Talking about the response in Latin America is talking about the response of middle-income countries with an epidemic considered as low level in a surrounding of averages, as Mirta is saying, has said in several locations. But we have had multi-sectorial cross-section responses in some countries with more forceful intervention by the civil society, trying to convert to a multi-serial approach and having also some long-standing responses. And depending on the sub-region, we also have bilateral and multilateral support from cooperation organism. And of course, the South-South cooperation, which is the best one for our region. Within this context, and later on, one of my colleagues will speak about the World Bank that after 2002 started to play a key role. There are many, many examples. In the next 10 minutes, I have my timer showing me the time left. I will speak about some aspects of the response in Latin America. I cannot go into detail, but there are several initiatives for advocacy, such as the coalition of first ladies and leader women, fora like Concasida, Precoslac, South Links. This will be the way I will follow in the next minutes. And I expect that at the end we will have time for certain reflections. The report that we presented last year about Latin America tells us how this epidemic keeps growing for vulnerable groups. In 2007, we reported 140,000 new infections, reaching 1.7 million people living with HIV so far. This will give us an estimate of 44,000 children under 15 and 63,000 deaths. This estimate of people living with HIV will place Brazil as a country with about 730,000 infections of people living with HIV, Mexico about 200,000. And of course, there is a lot to do with the population in every country. This graph that you know in the World Report will show us the evolution every 5 years of the intensity of the region, of the epidemics in the region. As time goes by, the map is different. We have more intense color in the country, which is showing the advance of the epidemic. I want to stop now because one of the most important needs we have in the region is to have more strategic information. We need more data availability in those targeted population, and then in order to make better decision. Talking about treatment, we can see all of the world regions and the number of people under treatment. Red is Latin America. Right now we have around 400,000 people under treatment out of 3 million people under treatment in middle and lower income countries. This is 31% of people that need the treatment. But also I want to tell you that there is an increase of 45% in relation to those figures notified in 2006. We can see here with more detail the Latin American region and how right now we have a coverage with a ART of 62%, that's the regional average. If we have Latin America and the Caribbean, the coverage is lower in the Caribbean. We are very happy of having and being recognized as one of the regions with one of the most important coverages, but of course we have to recognize that we did not finish our work. We still have to strengthen treatment in those countries where still there is room to do it, and we have to take into account that the prevention will allow us to close that gap. We are reporting that out of two people beginning the treatment, four new people get infected. It would be impossible with treatment just to reach that infection rate. So treatment will be the strategy that we have to follow. We also have important successes in the region. You can see here in the first two charts an increase of 56% in the number of children receiving ART in LAC. This is a very important achievement. Despite that, as we were saying yesterday in the Global Village with the Red Ribbon Group, there are some countries where the coverage is one-fourth of what it should be, and there is a long way to go about treatment for children. From UNAIDS is our direction for access universally. Those three pillars are very important, each of them. I would like to speak about these three pillars, the three ones. Maybe you cannot read that chart, but it's the three ones. In all of the countries in Latin America, most of the countries have a national strategic plan which is not financed. That's an important reason. We also need to have an operational plan to define the goals of in the long term, or rather in the short and medium term, and monitoring, which is another issue that we have to strengthen throughout the region. In relation to the last report on the progress of UNGAS, 16 out of 17 countries presented their report. We have a larger number of informed indicators. We have more involvement of the civil society. We have to recognize the leadership of GESTOS in a complementary report about sexual and reproductive health to be presented at the New York Assembly last year. And then we have challenges like strategic information, the identification of financial gaps, and the expense in SIDA. But we have to be clear about the financing needs to achieve universal access in each of the Latin American countries, to compare that to the current expense and to see which is the difference that will allow us to define the proposals, for example, for the Global Fund, then development and improvement of monitoring and evaluation tools. Here we can see the tracking of resources in green, the domestic public expense in Latin America as a response to AIDS is funded by national funds. In brown we have the international total, and then we can see the contribution of the global fund. This is the same chart for the Caribbean. It's a lower amount of domestic expense and international total together with the global fund. It's in brown also. Continuing with this path in monitoring responses, we can see certain prevention actions in strategic plans. The yellow shows what was done, like campaigns against stigma and discrimination, to expand the care of pediatric HIV, the program for groups which are more vulnerable, and laws and politics that will be obstacles to prevent and to take care of HIV patients in those populations with more risk. We are in the year 2008 when we have the UNGAS committee for 2010. It looked like too far away, but our 2010 is around the corner. We have to remind the countries, and we are part of the responsibility if we are really achieving some progress in those commitments. Today, in relation to prevention and treatment, we can see that there is a long way to go. The challenges in the region, the discrimination is still an obstacle for the access of key population and prevention for vulnerable population. In this conference, we have heard some presentation about homophobia. This is a catalyzer of epidemics. It should be part of the national response. Several speakers emphasized that on Sunday during the opening session, and yesterday and today also in the plenary sessions and some of the sessions to where we went. Leadership, sustained leadership, will allow us to respond to the HIV and to place that response within the priority agenda. And the multi-sectorial work with the participation of the stakeholders. These are the next steps, but I think that we should talk about the challenges or the way forward. This is a significant progress, but is it enough? We still have a lot to do, especially in prevention. Prevention is to be strengthened. The ministerial declaration was quoted in most of the plenaries. And we have to give a lot of follow-up to this declaration. We need more involvement of the civil society around stigma and discrimination. There is a proposal to have a stigma index in order to consider the sustainable financing. We know that strategic information is limited, and of course we have to strengthen the political commitment. We will have elections in 8 countries next year, and then we have to be careful about beginning that awareness program. Thank you very much.
Dr. César, y también gracias por mantener el tiempo. Nosotros ahora invitamos a...
Thank you very much. Next, we will have Dr. Madam Alessandra Nelo. I'll be reading her CV in English. Ella se especializó en la comunicación y la salud. Además, ha redactado más de 40 títulos en campañas de mercadotecnia. Trabaja con diferentes géneros especializados o revistas especializadas. Viene de Brasil. Además, es miembro del Comité de la Casa y la coordinadora de Un Mundo y Una Lucha, que es una lucha dedicada hacia obtener el acceso en América Latina. Ella ha participado en monitorear el UNGAS con el compromiso y lo utiliza como la herramienta de evaluación en las políticas de instrumentación. Ella en el 2003 recibió el premio a la plataforma UNGAS y es el que se ha utilizado para promover la investigación en 16 países para desarrollar una red de par a par entre activistas. Por supuesto que ella trabaja incansablemente con la redacción de títulos como parte de la campaña que las mujeres quieren detener el SIDA. Alessandra. Thank you very much, Carlos. I think my CV is much nicer than my presentation, and good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here and to be able to talk about in Spanish or in Portuñol about Latin America, I believe. Holding this conference in Mexico is absolutely fundamental so we can show how AIDS continues to impact our region, a region highly characterized by poverty, by unequal relationships between men and women, and because of the fundamentalism, the traditional morale, and resource concentration in the hands of only a few. And in spite of this, I'm proud to recognize that amidst this, we are being able to have a positive response, and this is why I decided to begin my presentation speaking about democracy, the steady search for democracy in our region is what signs our own search for the fight of human rights. And governments exist in order to represent our demands, and governments have the obligation to carry out programs that benefit everyone without looking into the particulars. Governments must be accountable to their peoples, and this then is what has allowed us to achieve the goals that we now have. It's interesting to talk about Latin America in a space like this, where HIV is seen from a global point of view, and creating the space in Mexico was thrilled. Africa was full, and it's great to see how this room is full today. Clearly, this is a space that allows us to speak about the advances, especially in the fields of treatment, and it's the area where we can say that we have a highly articulated civil society that can be full and knowledgeable activists. And we also recognize the fundamental role that community organizations and community networks have in Latin America. For example, I see that Latin America is well represented with their participants. Although we have successes, we also have some challenges, and most of the resources invested in AIDS today into the region are in the hands and the responsibility of the government. With the exception of Bolivia, everyone has national plans to face this, but as we've heard, there are many countries in the regions that do not have financed plans, and we also have the UNAIDS, with the exception of Uruguay, but many other countries, we don't have the participation of civil society that will help UNAIDS. And it's also important to recognize that in our search for democracy and economic and political independence, our countries continue to be hit hardly by countries whose autonomy represents the threat. Let's not forget that Latin America was exploited, was colonized, and would continue to be pressured via the bilateral agreements or by the false promises of development, which gives us the low capacity of reforms. It gives the privatization of areas in education and health, which have closed the doors to many people. These are key aspects that might help the world to understand why Latin America hasn't been able to improve in their response capacity. And I speak about these issues because they were built in order to build the AIDS fora in the region, formed by three sectors, the regional governments, communities, and agencies, cooperation agencies, before 2007. And now I begin to speak about what I was finally invited to. Was very interested because it allowed us, from the point of view of analyzing that I covered, it allows us to analyze the community response, governmental response, in light of the past 25 years since the onset of the epidemic. And I'd like to share at this moment the key issues. The first point has to do with collectivity and having continuity in the capacity building programs. But we also see that we don't have the necessary levels to make the proper response. We have to avoid the concentration of power and exclusion by providing knowledge and comply with universal access and extend the possibility of access to the region. Recognition in itself is not a guarantee of technical capacity. This is a very delicate issue, but to say that we need more capacities might be dangerous. And we have leadership in representation and ponder and work with assertive and strategic activism, avoiding victimization. We have to preserve the independence of the sector. It's important to reflect upon another kind of impacts that the Global Fund has in our region in a way that it will guarantee that other NGOs will not believe, because when they finance the local groups directly, then we can have a more independent form of actuation. Fourth, have building trust wherein involved parties will have the same decision-making powers and access to these same decisions. Five, improve the decisions in communities that have the proper type of structures, including by formulating new strategies. This means that we need to overcome, and we must be voluntary labor, and improve the accountability process and involve the mechanisms that involves government, social, civil society, and multilateral groups. Argentina, Bolivia, Chile, Honduras, Nicaragua, Peru, and Venezuela, and Panama do not have any monitoring or evaluation plans for the national response, which is an area where we also need to make further strides. And accountability is try to have accountability not only in the area of finance, but accountability has to do with legitimacy and the quality of response from the governments. And finally, point seven, have knowledge and understand that the data produced by civil society is important. Dr. Sesserman spoke about the improvements that we've tried to apply. Nevertheless, our efforts were not incorporated in UNAIDS data, and for us, that was an issue that left us rather worried because we are not giving all of the information. And on top of that, we have to consider seriously of what we're doing, because we sometimes don't take the proper political decision because we don't have the proper data, and because we don't have the data, then we don't have the will sometimes. For us, all of these affairs, all of these issues are significant, so we can begin to work on two of the most pressing needs. Number one, we need to reduce the price of the antiretroviral. And number two, we need to help in prevention. We still have millions of people in the regions that are not infected with HIV/AIDS. So it's important to keep ourselves like that. Latin America cannot be less important just because we don't have more cases. We have to be as important so we don't have that many cases. Very well. I began speaking about democracy, and I will end speaking about democracy. This is a very delicate time. It's a time where everyone understands and speaks and wonders if AIDS is a priority. The perspective, we need to take care of this so citizen participation is not lost. We have to strengthen this in order for us to live in an AIDS-free world. And I was thinking what key message can I share with the conference? And I thought that from Mexico, we have to see that from Latin America, we have the right to everything, and we want everything. We want a world that's environmentally sustainable without any form of energy crisis. We want to have areas well integrated into health and development. Human rights are indivisible. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Alessandra, for your presentation. I'm sure we will have a lot of feedback when it comes to the Q&A. Now, Leonardo Marmora, he is the current coordinator for the response in the fight against malaria. He has 20 years of a professional experience in the area of development and international cooperation, as well as having experience in investment, technical assistance, and programs of technical adjustment, both in Latin America and Africa. Has a PhD degree from the University of Paris. I don't know if we're overrepresented by Argentina because we have three, but it's really unintentional. So I hope this is not hindered either. Mirta, thank you very much. I know we have an overrepresentation. That was really not our intention. It's a product of faith. Yes, Carlos, I want to thank you. It's an honor to be able to share this table with people that have this caliber. The Global Fund is a very specific institution, highly polemic. It has innovative characteristics, while it has tried to crack a specific kind of dynamics. One, it's an institution that's born more from a reaction and not so much as an action. And what it suggests is really a model, and what it's leading to is to favor, to promote generation of multi-sectorial proposals in order to confront the three pandemia that are now attacking the organization. A key element of the round of this multi-sectorial table that will for the implementation of the projects is the capacity to dialogue with the group of actors. And this is why the Global Fund does not lend money. It doesn't attach money to conditions, but it generates a model whereby funds are given to countries, to the countries that elaborate their own proposals and have their own goals. When the Global Fund was created last year, the first question was, and who will have a right to access? And what was said is, well, let's give money to the poorest countries, to the low-income countries, the ones that are in Africa, to the countries that have a less privileged position, and that influences their organizational development, both in capacity building as well as in project development. And then we began working with the group, and before the last round of financing, we decided to open the door to other kinds of countries. Therefore, today, the criteria of eligibility are that all of the low-income countries are absolutely eligible, and countries that are not considered as low-income countries, those middle to low and middle to high level, are eligible under specific criteria. How income countries are completely out of this because these are the donor countries. And so what are the criteria? The criteria that we followed, that in order to provide the funds and they need the counterpart financing, the actions have to be quite pinpointed at and targeting the poor and vulnerable. And there's also the criteria of epidemiology. That's a limit of prevalence that has to be overcome. And it's a 1% of the general population, a 5% of prevalence in the vulnerables. And so these criteria for being eligible are determined, and this is very important, by an objective element, which is the classification, income classification of the World Group. It's already been in, it depends on the level of prevalence, and we have a series of exceptions, which are the insular economies. We give a priority to countries that are eligible because of their economic financial level, which means they do not have the necessary funds to fight pandemia. And in these new policies from the Global Fund, there's many countries in Latin American Caribbean countries that began being that can be eligible pursuant to the new scheme of eligibility. On the one hand of generalized epidemics, we have Trinidad, Tobago, Barbados, and Belize, and we have the epidemics in concentrations because of the high levels of populations. Will include Canada, Mexico, St. Kitts and Nevis, Santa Lucia, St. Vincent, and Grenadines. Now, at first glance, it reveals a promising review, and one would say, oh, the World Fund has opened the door to our region. In our ELSI region, there are many more countries that will have an access. And that's the first analysis that we all did with us, which is what we did with our agency colleagues. But if we go further into detail of what are the real consequences from this change in the level of eligibility of the Global Fund, then we see that the variable that's taken into account to decide or if a country is eligible or not is a list from the World Bank, which is quite volatile, 209 countries, and there were 56 changes affecting 46 countries in the last 5 years. So and then this generates a relative level of volatility in the country's status. And next, being a middle to low or middle to high level income countries, well, these bands are quite changeable. I was speaking about 100 to 200 is low, and medium to low is 900 to 3,750. And then 3,750 to 11,000. And this change, the switch from one level to another, very important, and the implications of funding and belonging to one of these three categories is equally important because the Global Fund will be financing the first type of group, 65% of the middle to low income countries, and 35% of funds allotted to middle to high level income countries. And so it's these kinds of analysis that also lead us to have other kinds of conclusions. And although we do have eligibility in 12 of the traditional countries, there are 13 that remain ineligible for TB and malaria. We have 12 more for AIDS. But for TB and malaria, we have the 12 countries that remain ineligible, and we have a high level of uncertainty, like Jamaica, the Dominican Republic, and their candidates to be high-level income countries. And if we see the evolution of the economic behavior from the past few years, we see that the trend is of economic growth throughout Latin America. And of course, this will be affecting the eligibility of countries at a very short term. There are 19 countries out of the 28 or 30 that we are working with in the LAC region, and 19 of them, which is 68% of our portfolio, will probably become affected in the next few years. And this is an issue that is alarming not only to the Global Fund. And I'm speaking out of my own representation. I'm not quite speaking on behalf of the Global Fund. And there's the similarity with Eastern Europe, whose situation is similar to ours. They have 5 countries that are not eligible, and next year 5 more, and 4 that are candidates, and 64% of the affected countries. Today, LAC and Eastern Europe represent approximately between 18 and 20% of the global funds, the projects funds by the global funds. In the near future, if we continue with this trend, if we continue with the same level of economic growth in our regions and with these levels of eligibility, we will be oscillating between 3 and 5%. That then will be the quota that we will have from the Global Fund. So, given the scenario, and with this I conclude, what are the mitigation alternatives that we have? Where we have a absolutely marked decrease in our region. I, as of this presentation, am not speaking using the institution's words. What I will be saying is what I believe after having worked 2 years with a portfolio. This is not the Global Fund's opinion. It's my own personal opinion. After having spoken about this widely with the agency partners and colleagues, we really believe that the eligibility criteria should be an epidemiological criteria and not an economic financial criteria. Any country that needs to have an access to the Global Fund must be able to do so independently of the economic factors based on a list which is only a small picture of what reality is. What could vary is the amount the state is expected to contribute. And so then my first issue is both countries that have low income levels, middle income levels, high income levels should be eligible for all three components. Maybe we might build them with specific coefficients and not only take into account the variables, which is income per capita, and another one, which is a shared cooperative participation or a progressive co-sharing, and not have these quantum leaps that where we have the cutoff levels. And what then are the future challenges, the challenges for this scenario? I believe the key elements, and we have a knowledge of information. We need precise information. Like Cesar said, given that the scenario of eligibility will be more complicated for countries that are growing, in order to have an access to vulnerable populations, we have to work with concise data. We have to work with documented data, and we have to provide them to the agencies at the same time, give them to the Global Fund. We have to define a position politically wise. And number three is we have to address the board of directors with a clear regional position of what the alternatives can be to mitigate these financing risks. Thank you very much.
Muchas gracias, Lelio.
Thank you, Lelio. Now we would like to invite Javier Candeloc. He's representative of the International Alliance for HIV/AIDS in LAC, and he's the representative of communities living with HIV, TB, and malaria as part of the Council of the Global Fund. He's one of the members of the Committee of the Leadership Program of the Conference, and he has worked in HIV/AIDS during the last 20 years in Latin America and at the world level.
Buenas tardes. Gracias por seguir con nosotros hasta esta hora y decirles que siempre es un placer presentar.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here with us, and it's always a pleasure to speak in Cervantes language, that means Spanish. I'd like to share some experiences that I have had with the HIV and AIDS work, but I will be more challenging. Now, why it's important to work with several populations or certain populations in those countries with concentrated epidemics? I think we have an idea, and this conference will help to understand better that. There is a lot of debate about the place of epidemics, but it's important to work on evidence. Why we are talking about key population or talking about vulnerable population? They are key for epidemics, they are key for their responses, and they are key for the epidemiological dynamics. There are certain challenges for categorization. Some years ago, I visited the program, and someone said that he was a key member of a population, and I said, we are creating an identity which is dangerous. So we have to be very careful when talking about key populations. Okay, we are talking about the trans community. I want to present some important data that we are collecting in relation to the trans community. Some of the data are out of date, but in general you can see the prevalence of gays, MSM, and trans population. We have three studies in Argentina, Peru, Ecuador, and Salvador, but we also have some studies in Asia Pacific, and yesterday we had a conference. If you see the figures, they are impressive and a matter of concern. We are not undressing one saint to put the clothes on another saint, and I beg you to understand that metaphor. The most important challenges are that we have only 9% of resources from UNCs. We need some commitment with the government. We have to understand the concept of machism, homophobia, transphobia, stigma, and discrimination. We should promote those strategies that are not based on evidence. The MSM category has been kind of deceiving, and in the program area, those efforts are centered in the metropolitan gaze, and we cannot increase the scale. We want to reach the bisexual men, and there is a lack of knowledge of the human behavior, and you have to take into account better the experience of trans and sex workers. We have a very interesting experience in the border project. We deliver condoms, and we improve the local environment with a multi-sectorial articulation. And we have an example in six places in Ecuador. Results are quite impressive because we did it with the Mexican National Institute of Public Health. If you compare the baseline with the use of condoms, you can see that at the end of the period there was a significant increase in the use of condom and the regular use of condom. So when a strategy is comprehensive and sustainable, the impact is quite positive to fight the epidemics. Okay, we will have several challenges during the life of a project. We need to have a sustainability of a change in the human behavior. Of course, in relation to the access to resources, we have certain political and cultural obstacles. Conservative governments, under the influence of the church, are still a barrier for the trans groups and the sexual workers. Most of the politicians do not want to talk about the issue, especially during the election period. There is stigma, discrimination. But we have to insist on these concepts. The data are a matter of concern, and most of the money goes to the big NGOs and not reach to the grassroots organization. There is a long way to go. We have a structural barrier. Most of the Latin American countries do not have registration for gay or trans institutions. If those words appear in the name, there is a lack of financial capability. Of course, now with the community system strengthening, we can overcome that. And there is not very much knowledge about the way to handle small subsidies or the resources coming from the Global Fund. And then another internal differences. We have opportunities like strengthening of community systems. There is an invitation to MCP to involve another vulnerable population, gender policy and sexual minority policy, and political changes. I think that the Mexico conference will be a good input to promote, is a good contribution for this type of promotion and debate. And this plenary of today is the best of example. What happened with transgender, with trans population? They have been categorized between the HSH or MSM group. There were no strategies for specific prevention, and basically they are invisible within the invisible. And as a transgender, we are not MSM, we are not gays, we are not men. Therefore, they are related to sexual work, to the harassment from the policy. And then, of course, they have problems with hormone treatment and with the implants, and therefore they have different health problems. The prevalence in Argentina in MSM is quite significant. In those cases where we could break down the data, in most of the countries in Latin America, within the MSM category, we will find bisexual, trans, and gays. But these findings are quite significant. Now, this is the prevalence of HIV in Asia. The trend is quite similar. This is a trend for any region or sub-region with a concentrated epidemic, and we have to understand that this is an important pattern. Some people say that they are life expectation is 30 to 35 years. The major cause of death is age in trans people. Trans, they just go to the hospital to die. many trans people are going to be arrested when they go to buy bread. Of course, they cannot remove the silicone implants if you want to buy bread. But most of them, of course, are devoted to social work. This is the comparison of the prevalence between trans and sexual workers. And it has to be with the ways of transmission in the different practice of the sexual work of women and trans. This is not the witch hunt. I'm not saying that most of them have HIV and AIDS. We have to be more specific and to work on data. This is at the end of my presentation. We make an international call to redouble efforts with the trans community. This is a problem in America and in Asia. Even in the United States, we have to increase the knowledge about trans, talking about trans or transvestite. People start to make 150,000 questions. People do not know anything about gender identity. We need the more participation of trans in the decision-making spaces. And, for example, the money from the Global Fund should go to the grassroots groups so that there are specific programs for sexual workers. We have to revise whatever is good and to change whatever is not good. We do not have to reinvent the wheel. There are many works, many research help to the sexual workers and also to the trans. We have to open up the coverage of the programs. We don't want the trans in 2008 going to the hospital to die. Despite some epidemiologists which are not very happy with my opinion, I think that to classify people is not very good. I say that because we have three Argentinians on the table. We need to continue the political incident with the trans issue, with the social workers, drug users. We do not want to remove the clothes from a saint to put back the clothes on another saint. So please invite trans, invite gay people, invite sexual workers to take part in decision making and increase the access to resources without overlooking other possibilities. We are committed, all of us, in providing more evidence in relation to this issue. Tomorrow at 9 o'clock we will have the plenary of sexual work and Elena Reinaga in Spanish, and tomorrow at 6:30 to the UGTZ Sictan Laxo we are presenting a survey about key population. And I think that we're all responsible of the future of people. We cannot carry in our conscience the idea that we still contribute to this massacre of the trans community.
Bueno, gracias, Javier. Ahora...
Thank you, Javier. I think we still have 20 minutes, and I would like to hear a little bit your participation, your questions, your remarks. Please be concrete, be short, be brief. Please come to the microphone, say your name, and pronounce your question.
My name is Gustavo, Argentinian. I am part of the International Federation with the Transportation Union. And I want to ask why. I heard people say there's multi-sectoriality and that they acknowledge the participation in this subject, that there's an improvement in treatments. And when I spoke about multi-sectoriality, I thought you were speaking about Agreement 147 of the ILO. And this is what we use in the three-party meetings. And on the other hand, the union workers, and especially the transportation, the Teamsters, and the what we represent, which is the international Teamsters, we represent more than 10 million worldwide.
Tenemos un representante de la CSI.
Without the representations of CCI, we speak about 168 million union workers worldwide. And so when the transportation sector, especially when the transportation sector becomes a risk sector or a key sector in this in these affairs, the question is, why are we not analyzing the subject, all of us together? Why are we in a certain way isolated? And unfortunately, we have our own programs and we work internationally to improve. Because I was listening to the opinions from the representation of the Global Fund, and I really hope these opinions could become the Global Fund's opinions. Boy, would it be important for things to change. I'm sure things will not be modified because economic interests are entirely different to the interests of people. And to conclude, if we can understand why are we not here, because union members do not have the opportunity to take it up, to speak about it, and to work jointly to solve this, because we are the workers of the world who are the affected.
Buenas tardes. Soy Aracho Castro de la Universidad de Harvard in Boston.
I come from Harvard University in Boston, and I have a couple of questions. The first one is, with the criteria factors that you've drafted, have you taken into account the possibility of including a factor of inequality with the resources? Sometimes we know that self-resources are accompanied by a large inequality of distribution within a country, and the second one has to do with the level of knowledge of the epidemic. In Colombia has 3 million people, of affected people, and it's really unknown within that one population. And so they have a armed conflict. They have epidemiological data that are absolutely fragmented. And I've tried to analyze the information from Colombia. It's very, very difficult. And it's hard to think that Colombia cannot qualify to receive funds from the Global Fund. Thank you.
Laura Armas, Mexicana,
New York. Laura Armas, I live in the United States in Dallas. And I have a couple of comments with the statistics and the numbers that we were given in Latin America. We have the mobile populations. Are these included? And do we have the problem of immigration? And the second comment has to do with health provider education. I believe we need to work with motivation, begin to promote activism, and qualify the medical staff so we can have as part of the medical curricula, not the aid subject as a annex subject, but maybe one whole year of education on AIDS, one semester that includes education on gender, on trans, and on other areas, and that this is integrated with sciences, basics, both biological sciences and social sciences. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is Alejandrina García. I come from Mexico City, and I work with Comprehensive Health for Women, which is a feminist group in Mexico. And I was coming to this session hopefully to see women represented here. It seems that more and more there's a clear feminization of this pandemia. And I was really expecting to see that women were present, both women and young people, and we don't see ourselves represented here. I am concerned because the World Conference being here in Mexico, we are not representative, and today that we had the women's marched in the Latin America and we were not named, and we have many needs to have specific prevention and treatments with a gender perspective and to have specific policies for women.
Y también hay otro punto en el tema.
And there's another issue that has to do with the global funds. That's true. Mexico has just entered this arena to see if it can receive funds, but it won't be allotted to the subject of women. It will be men that have MSMs or gay men, and women are once again invisible. This epidemic is reaching the door of homes. We cannot negotiate the condom because the partners can be violent. We don't have campaigns. We don't have specific campaigns in Mexico targeting women. And this area where the Latin American women should be visible, it just did not even appear. This is a call. Women should be present in the speeches and campaigns, and not only in a piece of the global village. Yes, we also need more research, that's right, in the area of women, and clarify how HIV is hitting us. In the CIPAM work, we see that it's hitting us through migration, the fact that men have got to go work elsewhere and come back infected. They infect their partners means that HIV is arriving into indigenous, poor, and rural areas. Also, I believe we have to see that HIV generates poverty, and it generates a higher level of poverty in women. My name is Cecilia Galleta. I come from Latin American School of Social Sciences here in Mexico. And my question is for Cesar Antonio Nunez. This comes from a chart that he shared that says laws, standards, and legislations that represent obstacles in high-risk groups. 55% of the country said they do not have any laws that hinder prevention in high-risk groups. And I would like to ask you specifically about that, which is the self-report from the country, because the research that Javier Hurtado spoke about that we will be sharing on Thursday, we saw that no country guarantees a change in gender legally. We have also found that gay people cannot and do not have the same liberty of union as heterosexuals. We have seen many, many laws that do not guarantee equally prevention for all groups that have been called the key group. So I'd like to ask about this. My name is Marcos Arana, and I come from the National Institute of Medical Sciences and Nutrition. A question for Cesar Antonio Nunez in relationship to the fact that, is there any piece of information from your data in the rural Latin America? And another question that has to do with nursing. Much has been mentioned about nursing, especially in Africa, about the recommendations coming from AFAS. Nevertheless, Latin America, the nursing is eliminated from the beginning as a way of preventing. What then would be the recommendation from the from PAHO and from and for nursing? Because I believe this has to be explicit, especially for countries that have a culture of nursing their babies. Okay, we see that we have a huge queue, and we need time to answer, and we only have 10 minutes, so I will ask you to be brief, and please, no more people standing up. My name is Susana Chavez, and I come from Peru. I have two specific questions. One has to do with the data, which means that we are still worried. We're worried about the fact that the numbers are only about the characteristics and the possibilities that health systems have. These are the specific kinds of populations and will skew, for example, the information. And so what happens with women that don't have children? What happens with women that go to the service, don't go to the services? Another issue is the sectorizing population, and how can we begin to look into them as specific groups, and we're not taking into account specific needs. I believe that the reproductive health sexuality is really a much higher level of need, and we have, a danger of linking sectors again, for example, transvesty repairs that are linked to VIG, and we are forgetting the elements that must be introduced into the process.
Buenas tardes a todos los miembros de la mesa, viejos amigos y conocidos. Mi nombre es Pablo Ana María de los
My name is Pablo María, and I come 8 grades from Peru. And I'd like to make a comment, an affair that's been concerning us from the first international, from the first meet. I don't think we're speaking about genders. I think we're sectorizing, dichotomizing this between MSMs or men or women. So we are just putting together rice and mangoes, actually. And I think we have to have a deep analysis. Bank Global Fund has only given us one piece of sheet of information of how to incorporate this. And I suspect that many, many people have not even incorporated the subject into this matter because they don't know how to do it. And so I need to, things have to be less dichotomizing, more integrating. We can delve further into this so we can all be included. My name is Walter Moyo. I'm a GYOB from the largest maternity from the Ministry of Health in Ecuador. And I'm worried also because we're not taking women into account. We're not taking women into account, just seeing from the point of view as a vulnerable group. But it's there's a situation that should worry us most. The situation that we work with, we've done research in cancer in uterus, and 90% of our patients have dysplasia. This is either a high or low degree, but this is in terms of to die with cancer will be, unfortunately, another serious problem for Latin America. Yes, good afternoon, and thank you very much for your papers. My name is Mary, and I'm the regional advisor for UNESCO in the region. And my question, I want to ask Javier a question. Javier, I see a contradiction or a difficulty, perhaps, which is the way you call it, to overcome the categories and the classifications. And we see that there's an ever-growing need with pressures coming from management based on results. And now, if we cannot name or we do not have the proper name or good classification for the groups that we all know are already quite invisible, then how can we ensure that the resources are arriving, that the programs have an impact, and that they are receiving the services that they will need if we can't even identify them properly by name? Thank you. Thank you very much. And now I ask the speakers to contribute with their final comments. We will start by doing a marathon of answers. There's some very good questions, and I'd like to start with multi-sector.
This is a great question. I remember some time ago in Costa Rica we have a meeting with trade unions of Teamsters. Many times we have many, many initiatives and we do not provide a proper follow-up. And I remember that is something we have to resume. The joint program of United Nations on AIDS is co-sponsored by 10 agencies of the system like ILO. So I can tell you that we will give follow-up to this concern, because when I speak about multi-sectoriality, and I mentioned several times, there are sectors that still could be added. There's so much to do that everybody can participate. And most of you talked and reinforced the concept of strategic information. We need information. Where is epidemics in women? We need the surveys. And what about the indigenous population? We need to have studies. and this is information to inform decision maker. Also, what Javier presented is gender violence. People, I've been reading lately in Mexico, Guatemala, and Chile, the violence based on gender is something day to day, and HIV is another aggravating factor. I try to summarize everything in 10 minutes, and you might be right. I did not talk much about the effort made in the region to avoid the feminization of epidemics. In concrete, Brazil has established a plan for to avoid the issue of feminization, and we are going to be talking more about the woman. This issue about the legislation, let me show you these four graphs. This has come from the report that the countries presented as an advance of UNGAS. 55% of the countries did not recognize it, but I was talking about the weakness of monitoring and evaluation. We have a notification of any time. We need to have verification elements in order to know the quality of information. And we have to strengthen that all throughout Latin America so that we have a good reality of the information we're sending. And about that, we have a registry in the city, and it has to do with the issue of strategic information. We have to strengthen the training national program because, as Lilio Marmora was saying today, countries are seeing a forced need now that they have more subvention, they have to have more documentation. In relation to breastfeeding, I do not know if breastfeeding was forbidden or that it is contraindicated. There are certain directives and guides depending on each country and the newer. We will advise the mother to breastfeed their kids. And I do not think that this is forbidden. I'm sure that, in fact, this follow-up of the issue of infections like papilloma or dysplasia in women should have to be integrated to this strategy. I know that I'm talking too fast. I would like to have some minutes with you to keep our conversation, and I give the floor to my colleagues. I wanted to say, I wanted to invite you to participate in the next session about Latin America. We're going to present all of the results of the research on sexual and reproductive health in the woman in 9 countries in Latin America. I am ashamed because I did not emphasize the gender issue, and this is our major working issue, but because we have a specific session on Latin America in Hall 6. We are all invited. Thank you. Also, we have to analyze the production of data, because sometimes we read that you have a lot of information and that there should be enough to take action, but we're not taking them even with that information. I will refer to the question made by our colleague from Harvard University about including inequality in the countries. LAC is a region with more asymmetry in the allocation of income in the world. This is a problem with a great impact on the allocation of funds. Brazil, for example, is classified as medium-high income with a population in the south of Brazil, industrial population, rich, but we are criminalizing a large part of the northern population, which is pure. In all of the countries, such as the countries in my country, Argentina, Brazil, we have a lot of asymmetry in terms of distribution of income. This is a delicate matter because the fund cannot replace the internal policy of a country and to generate social policies that will be favorable for a better distribution of income. For the fund, it will be difficult to take ability or eligibility position. That would be difficult, complicated. It would be better to do it in the second stage. What we can do now is to see the other variables, not only the income, but also ad hoc indicators or unmet basic needs or other variables that be combined to create a coefficient applicable for this issue. In terms of the knowledge of there is a high level of lack of knowledge and the handling of real data and accurate data has been mentioned several times. Colombia is a country that has a very serious problem with the displaced population. It had access to funds from the Global Fund with a project of $9 million for Colombia specifically for displaced population, 500,000 youngsters displaced. But this is the project I love best in my portfolio because we could approve a good synergy and compatibility of the several actors in response to the epidemics in Colombia. Just to finish, and our colleagues from the Transportation Trade Union, he mentioned two things which are very important, the different states of participation and something that could be done and to develop. At the level of the country, there is a possibility of participating through the mechanism of country coordination. In the case of the World Bank, they take care of putting together the proposals. If you are a vulnerable group, you have the right to demand space there, and you have the right to participate in the presentation of the proposal to the World Bank. We also have a chair of Latin America representing the governments of Latin America and another chair representing the NGO from the north. And, of course, there is a possibility of influencing the world policy from the Global Fund. I'm not talking about a dream. It is possible if we get together, we organize ourselves, and we create an agenda which is able to be supportive. We do not want to make another big category in where we put a lot of different types of population. And about the feminization, we have to understand how women are exposed to HIV. It's not by a spontaneous appearance. If there is a feminization in a country, we need to have survey and to understand why, which is the dynamics for the exposition of the women to HIV. Beyond discussion, we have to move into action. And if we talk about sexual workers and trans people, I am with you. I think they are workers and they are women, and in a way they have a problem that has to do with the trade union situation and the gender matter. Thank you to the panelists. Thank you to the audience. My colleagues have to leave. I'd like to make a final remark. I was expecting to hear about the lack of sensibility of the region in the world arena of the response to the HIV/AIDS.
las presentaciones, las ponencias, pero las intervenciones de
but the presentation from the public show that they do have sensitivity within the region. Workers, women, young people, they do want a space of visibility, a space of participation that many times those who are responsible for policy making cannot conquest or cannot guarantee. In that sense, I believe that this is something quite Latin American. This idea of looking into our own problems, on the problems we are facing, is fine, but we have to do it, as Javier was saying, in a more transversal manner. We have to find spaces of dialogue, and maybe Latin American conferences can provide that, a space of dialogue where the problems from the different groups affected could we work in a better manner, as you have requested. But at the same time, we have to know that we live in a reality of concentrated epidemics, and therefore the existing resources are not enough. So looking into our problem, we have to find a space for the dialogue, and we want to be more sensitive for the rest of the world. Latin America is forgotten in the scene of aid for development. If we are not together to find a way to become sensitive for the rest of the world, I think that the AIDS epidemic will follow the most terrible patterns and the most unsustainable path for the future of the next generation. Thank you for your attention.